AP Radio News. I'm Tim McGuire. People determined to break curfew confronted Baltimore police last night. Julie Walker tells us more.
Police warned people, leave or be arrested. When the cops moved in, glass bottles were thrown at them. They retaliated with pepper spray, and several people were arrested, including Carrie Dwin Henry, who said before she was taken into custody, she would defy the curfew because as a white woman, she said she wanted to show that black lives matter.
I'm here in solidarity because I risk less. And I've been hurt less by the oppression, but this curfew is oppression, and I'm going to defy it.
The arrest capped what was otherwise a peaceful day of rallies and marches. Julie Walker, Baltimore.
Today is billed as a day of prayer and healing, with the governor and other officials attending several events in Baltimore. A New York City police officer is in critical condition following surgery after being shot in the head while attempting to stop a man he suspected of carrying a handgun. Mayor Bill de Blasio tells WABC-TV.
This was an unconscionable act of violence, not just against one police officer, but against the city of New York, against the values we hold dear.
Officer Brian Moore is the fifth New York police officer shot this year. Big military cargo planes can't land any longer at Kathmandu's airport. Heavy planes have damaged the only runway, slowing down the international relief effort. More than 7,000 people are dead, thousands more recovering from injuries from last weekend's earthquake. The first 275 of close to 700 women and girls rescued by the Nigerian military from the Boko Haram militant group have arrived at a refugee camp. Charles Otibagi is with the National Emergency Management Agency.
They are all women and children, but the majority are children.
The Nigerian military says it's also destroyed more than a dozen insurgent camps. This is AP Radio News. On to the Preakness for the Kentucky Derby winner.
American Pharoah rolled along the outside down the stretch to survive a three-horse battle and pull clear at the wire. It was the horse's fifth win in six starts. Jockey Victor Espinoza won the Derby for the second straight year and third time overall. It was also the fourth Kentucky Derby win for trainer Bob Baffert, who last won the run for the Roses in 2002. Firing line with 52-year-old jockey Gary Stevens aboard had to settle for second, and previously unbeaten Dortmund was third. Dortmund had won its first six races. I'm Jim Militello.
Floyd Mayweather Jr. remains unbeaten. His 48th victory, a unanimous decision over Manny Pacquiao in their welterweight title fight last night in Las Vegas. A 38-year-old Mayweather, who takes home $180 million from that bout, says he wants to leave the ring before he turns 40.
I invested my money extremely well and good. I can quit boxing today, and I'm A-OK.
I'm Tim McGuire, AP Radio News.
Green light. Hey, girl. School zone. I'm getting hungry. Car changing lanes. You want to meet me for pizza? Stop sign. Intersection clear. Yeah, street. Pizza sounds good. Ball in street? Girl in street!
It's hard to concentrate on two things at once, like texting and driving. Stop the text. Stop the wrecks. How will you stop texting and driving? Tell us at stoptextstopwrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
The traditional light bulb, a groundbreaking invention in 1879. It's time we switch to longer-lasting Energy Star light bulbs. They're more efficient than the old bulbs, like a text message is more efficient than a carrier pigeon. And they cut down on our energy costs. Because in our own groundbreaking age, we deserve a light bulb that saves us some cash. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
You're so annoying.
You're so annoying.
Stop copying me.
Stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop talking to me.
Kids will spend 10 minutes copying everything their sibling says.
You're such a doofus.
You're such a doofus.
How about 2 minutes to brush their teeth? Brushing for 2 minutes now can save your child from severe tooth pain later. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. 2 minutes, twice a day. I have the time.
Mom!
A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ad Council.
This is Mark Amtower. With lower margins, your limited marketing budget has to work harder than ever. LinkedIn is one of the most robust marketing platforms available. With over 350 million members worldwide, 110 million in the U.S., and 3.1 million members within 50 miles of this station, I guarantee your customers and prospects are here. Connect, influence, motivate, create leads. I can show you how. When you want to maximize the return on your LinkedIn presence, email me at mark@federaldirect.net.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Arlington, Virginia offices of the Arlington Chamber of Commerce. I'm here with our sponsors today, the Arlington Chamber, Optifor, Verisolve, and Cressa. We have a number of wonderful guests here today. Mark, why don't you read off our guests?
Sure, Dana. First up, we have Victor Cornelier, the CEO of TSI Corps. Second is Frederica Irwin, president of Her Corner. Third is Wes Hester, President and CEO of Foxhole Technology, and we're going to end with Mark Drever, President and CEO of Accelerate Solutions.
And I'm your host, Dana Theus with EmpowerCoaching.com. We're going to start with Victor Cornelier, CEO of TSI Corp. Victor, what is TSI Corp?
Well, we're subcontractors on high-rise buildings, both residential and commercial. We manufacture architectural products, and we also install those products. So we're called building envelope contractors. The company itself is a household name to major developers and architects in the Washington, Baltimore area.
So how big or small is the company?
It's about 200 employees and annual sales in the 40 to 50 million range.
And you started this company how many years ago?
I started in 1977, this month, by the way. So 38 years this month.
Congratulations.
April 7th, by the way.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Why start a company?
Why start a company? Wow, the entrepreneurial spirit had been in my blood as a child, and it continued on. My father was the same way, and it was something that I worked in corporations, but I found out that I couldn't control my destiny. I had to take the risk and do it myself, and it proved out to be rather well. You still have a destiny. You have to deal with your clients. They're the ones who you work for, but you make your own decisions on a daily basis. Can't beat it.
So what was Dad's business when you were a kid?
Dad's business was in the commercial decorating, which was more into the big shows where the exhibitors would hire him to build their exhibits for trade shows in the Boston area.
Did you ever work for him when you were a kid?
I did as a kid. Yeah, got the inside operation, understanding how conventions worked, and saw the amount of money that was being spent on such activities, for automobile shows and industry shows in the Boston area. Yeah,
it was
pretty insightful.
Did you ever think about going into his business?
Not necessarily. I think the idea of going into business is going into business. I don't care what your specialty is or whatnot, if you're in the medical business or you're in any kind of it, it's the business of running that particular function. And you have to learn how to run a business, and that's what was driving me in that sense. It was an interest to stay in the construction business, but it was the idea of being in a business and running it.
Brothers and sisters?
One sister.
Older, younger?
7 years, my senior.
What was it like being a little brother?
Awful.
Really?
At that age group. We didn't know each other that well growing up. 7 years was a lot of difference. I was more of a nuisance to her, and as she was coming up through her teen years and like. But as the years went by, we're extremely close, and that's what happens.
What would she have said about her little brother back then?
He was arrogant, pain in the fanny sort of thing. He wanted to be involved with everything, be front and center, and when you were pushed to the side, you didn't accept it very well. And so it was a competitive, challenging, environment. When I think back on that, that was pretty much the case. So you want to have your own identity.
Yeah, so this need for an identity and not to be pushed aside. Did that inform your business?
I think it was a root development at that point. I mean, if you look back and you can say that, what you did and always had worked and had jobs, independent jobs through college and later on, married early in life at that point, but had the entrepreneurial spirit and willing to take the risk. And even when you're a child, you're still going to fight for your own identity. You're going to be competitive, and you're going to take your losses, you're going to take your wins, but it's going to formulate you, and I think that's what happens. It's part of, like I said earlier, survivorship leads to good leadership.
You said that your children are in your business, so you didn't join your dad's business, but you have some children in your business.
Yeah, it's a more opportune thing. And I got three boys in the business, but I had never intended for them to be there. I never wanted to see them once I got done paying tuitions in college and grad schools and this sort of a deal. And my instructions to them were, well, go work for somebody else and come back, and I don't care what industry you're in. And two of them did that. They worked 12 years, one of them 12 years in another business, another one 15 years. When they came back, they were seasoned people. Then all I had to do was teach them the particulars about our industry, and they've done that very well.
You mentioned earlier that you have a daughter. How come she didn't join the business as well?
Yeah, she's got the competitive spirit also, and she, again, being an only girl with the three boys, she had to survive at that sense, and she did that very well. But her interests have taken her out of the country, and she spends a lot of time in South America and over in the Far East. And so I'd love to have her back in. I'd love to have her in. We consult, actually. We talk about situations, and when we do discuss, and we find out that she has an interest in the business. I think through a succession plan we talked about, you know, through the trust funds and whatnot, she has a little bit of an interest that way, but she's not earning it day by day.
So what is it like doing a succession plan with three kids in the business? Are they fighting over who gets to be first?
No, there's none of that. They recognize each other. The age difference gap is 16 years from the oldest to the youngest, and the number two that's in that group is only 2 years behind the oldest. So there's a lot of maturity and going on. It's not about control, but it's more about process and how to run their each segment piece in order for it to be integrated and work together inside. So one's a CFO, one's now a president of the company, and the other one runs our plant operations plant manager. He's got his own operation, you know, responsibilities in that manner. But at the board level, they all have to, you know, work well together.
So
and that's been a struggle, but it's getting there.
I'm curious, though, so you've been a father and you've been the head of a company, and now that you're head of a company with children in it, what is the hardest of those three scenarios?
That company is your leadership. I've known them since they were in diapers. You know, I've known them forever. And I remember all the old habits. I remember the struggles. I remember the successes. And I look at all of them and trying to understand where they learned their lessons, or what they did learn as lessons as they were growing up and developing. And so using that, you know, and identifying them as good managers, which is what they are.
So what was the biggest lesson you learned from your kids in the business?
Is to work very hard to separate family issues from business issues and operate in two separate environments. They don't relate. My wife, God love her to death, she loves to talk about the business, but the family in the business, and I have to push that to a side. I can't let that happen because I don't need her input into the business aspect of that. Business is business. You put that hat on, and then when family's family, you put that hat on, and they don't mix.
That's interesting coming from a family business owner,
yeah.
Because a lot of family businesses don't run that way. They're very intermixed. Did you learn that lesson about the importance of keeping them separate when you were a kid?
Not so much as when I was a child, no. It was more so in watching them develop and other people coming in. And it's not just about the family business, because we have other managers that are in the same age groups. And I told the boys when they came in, I said, you're going to have to earn this job. This is not something you're going to be given. You're going to have to earn the right. I don't care what the name is in the back of your shirt. It doesn't matter. But the fact is that you've got to be capable, and you've got to have the experience, and you've got to produce and be accountable and responsible and be a good leader. And leadership is not something that everybody has. We know that. I think everybody around the table knows that's the case.
Victor, how rewarding has it been for you to see both of your boys have the company come full circle and have them in a president and CFO proximity here as you're transitioning out of your career?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not sure I'm transitioning out of my career, but they may have a definition that says a little, their description of that may be a little bit different. The idea is that it's I made the change. I had a partner. I bought that partner out, and the decision was made 5 years ago to do that. In my interest in buying it out, and people say, well, why don't you let him buy you out, and you can go on into the sunset and enjoy your life and do this, do that. Enjoying my life is working. There's no sex. I would miss all my friends, all my business friends, associates, doing things like this. And then there's been struggles, and I've said, was this really worth it? And so when I get out of the heat of the battle, put the family hat back on, and say, yes, it's 100% worth it. If I go back over those same tracks, I'd make the same decisions exactly the same way. It's well worth it.
You mentioned struggles. There's no way you run a business for 30 years and don't have some struggles. Tell us about some of the failures that helped you succeed later, become a better leader.
Well, the first failure was we had a business. We're in the commercial construction business, and we started up a residential distribution of products going into residential, and it put us into a bankruptcy situation. Now, we never had to declare bankruptcy, but that was after 14, 15 years of being in business. And so the big lesson learned, I didn't need counsel for that, you know, psychological counsel, but I had read and heard and that the big names in our history in the company, in the country, people have filed for bankruptcy. Walt Disney filed for bankruptcy many times, Hershey many times. And so, okay, I'm not a Hershey and I'm not a Disney, but you talk to people and it's not an uncommon deal. We never had to file for bankruptcy. Every vendor we had got paid. And we never lost any market share because of our reputation. So to regenerate ourselves in 1990, it was an easy thing to do because the market base was there.
So in all of this, what are you most proud of?
I mentioned earlier the idea of surviving. And I've never considered myself a survivor, but when good friends remind me that that's what you are, and I think that's what all of us are here, is that that's the instinct. And it's something you are that. And It's something that I will never forget. And I think the boys, not only the boys in the business, but the other managers and people their age that are in the business are cut out of the same mold. We're just coming out of the country's worst recession in my lifetime. And so consequently, they don't know blue skies. They know how to survive too. So,
what's the website?
It's tsicorporations.com.
This is Dana Theus with my co-host, Mark Cohen. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your business spotlight. Joining us today is Isabella Fuentes, Marketing Director at BusinessWise CPAs. Isabella, what is BusinessWise CPAs?
BusinessWise CPA supports government contractors, small businesses, and nonprofits with outsourced CFO and financial consulting services.
And what's your role in the company?
I'm the Marketing Director.
And as the Marketing Director, what does that mean?
Well, I actually wear several hats. My primary role is to improve and extend the branding of BusinessWise CPA through referrals, client meetings, networking in the D.C. area, mm-hmm. As well as supporting current client relationships.
And what do you like most about your job?
I like the most that I don't have to be at a desk all day. I'm out and about meeting new folks and learning experiences from other entrepreneurs.
Right. What makes your organization so special in your view?
I believe our added value is that we are not just a number report kind of type firm. We're very much integrated with our clients. They rely on us for all important decisions. We help them not only with the numbers, but on the future growth of the business.
And what is it that the clients appreciate most about the company?
That they can call us and they talk to the same person every time.
Okay, and who's the perfect client?
Perfect client is small to mid-size organization looking to save on a full-time employee and as well as get the added value of the consulting.
Great. What's the website for the company?
www.businesswisecpa.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Isabella Fuentes, Marketing Director at BusinessWise CPAs. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
Joining us for this Business Spotlight is Wes Burnett, partner at Optifor. Wes, what is Optifor?
Optifor is a securities firm that integrates legal, tax, and financial and risk in order to offer optimal results for clients.
Who's your perfect client?
Perfect client is someone who actually would like to combine services, make their life simpler, and is very family-oriented. Our firm itself is very family-oriented. We love helping families take care of their own. And that can be multi-generational.
So what would a family need when they would come to you?
Typically what they're doing is trying to simplify their personal life by trying to have somebody else worry about their legal and their tax and financial affairs and present them with solutions rather than questions.
solutions rather than questions. So give us an example of a good solution.
A good solution is something that results, for example, in the lowest tax bill, the greatest savings, and taking care of the values important to the family, like saving for college for children or grandchildren or something along those lines.
So what do you enjoy most about your work?
My clients. Although a second place close would be my staff, because I recruit very specifically people who have the same values as our clients. So we truly are very involved with our clients' lives, and they are family to us.
What about your family? Are they in the business too?
No, although there's certainly plenty of lawyers and financial advisors and so on in the business. But no, they all have their own lives, and we're very pleased, quite frankly, with that. I actually have a wife who's a teacher for 42 years, so I take a lot of my values from her.
What is the website?
Optifor.com, OPTIFOUR.com.
Thanks for listening to this Business Spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theus, with my co-host, Justin Lang. Next up, we have Frederick Irwin, president and CEO of Her Corner. Frederick, what is Her Corner?
Her Corner is a network for women business owners. We are specifically for women business owners, not women in business in general. Several criteria to join, and one of them is a commitment to growth.
Why start this business?
I know, that's a great question. I ask myself this too.
Every day.
Yes. I really needed something like Her Corner for myself.
Because you were a business owner?
I was a business owner. I was running a professional services consulting firm. And what I was really missing was a chance to connect and work with other women in a peer group setting and be able to really talk about how to grow our businesses.
So why is working with women in a peer group setting important to you?
Well, not to offend anybody, but what I found was that when I was in peer group settings, I was often the only woman at the table. Maybe there were two of us, maybe three of us. And I had a moment once where I was in one of these peer groups with other CEOs, most of them men. It was late 2009, and the industries in general, everybody was kind of having a hard time. One of our biggest clients, however, was in the mental health space, and so we were doing great. We were working with the CEO of mental health hospitals in Florida, Texas, generally places where it's warm. And the problem with that was that we were growing, but I was on the road all the time. And so what I shared during that meeting was, business is great, but I am having a hard time on the family side. I don't want to tank my marriage, and I have children that I really would like to see, and you know, I'm struggling. And the answer that I was given was, oh, this is a childcare issue. And I said, no, this is a staffing issue. And really, when I walked out of that meeting, it made me realize that I wanted to have conversations with other women who were building firms like I was, where I could say, you know, sometimes it's really hard to build these companies, but also run the household and take care of the kids and have people understand.
Now, your current business is very focused on helping women support each other in this high growth business kind of format. But it's also very motivational. You're really working to motivate them and help them stay motivated. Yeah. How young were you when motivating other women who were ambitious and driven to grow really came into being for you?
My mom always told me whenever since the day maybe I can remember, if I had a problem, you know, Frederick, there's always a solution. And, you know, I was brought up on this figure it out, think bigger, don't let anything get in your way.
What was mom doing when you were a kid?
My mom still works for the French Embassy here in Washington. She is part of a group that lobbies on behalf of nuclear energy, nuclear power. And she was working full time back then, too.
And what about dad?
My dad was an entrepreneur. Both my parents immigrated to Washington from France. And my dad started several French restaurants.
That's the French accent.
Yeah, exactly.
And you said you had gone to a girls' school.
Yes.
What was Fred at girls' school all about?
You know, it's funny. My mom really wanted to name me Frederick, which is a very French name, but not very common in the United States. And so when I was maybe 6 months old, she told my dad, we're going to nickname her Khaki, my dad was like, whatever, we're calling her Fred. And from day one, I was always Fred, except for my mom and sister, who insist on referring to me as Khaki. So I was Fred even in the all-girls school always. The difference was back then I was Fred Campagna, which sounded maybe a tiny bit more feminine than Fred Irwin.
So, but in a girls' school, you got a sense of how women can support each other, mm-hmm. which interesting that that's what you're doing today.
Yes.
And this is your third business?
This is my fourth business.
Fourth business.
I don't say that from a, woohoo, look at me, I've built four businesses. I say that more from a, it took me four times to get it right.
So is this the right one?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Why is this the right one?
Well, the numbers and the growth are phenomenal. So from a business fundamentals perspective, it's on the right track, but it's also the most in line with me and what I want to do. And I have to tell you, it took me about 2 years to get over myself and the idea that I was going to go out and build a business just for women. Because
what does that mean? Get over yourself.
Well, because I was never, I never thought of myself as a feminist. I never thought, you know, and so I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to go build this woman, this business just for women. You know, who, why, you know, but I realized that I really felt like I could make a difference.
What is it about women that is helping you grow this business so quickly?
Well, for starters, the market is huge. Every day, 1,200 women start businesses. A year ago, that was around 700. So the market is really booming in terms of number of businesses started by women. Simultaneously, there's more girls going to college, more women going to graduate school. The financial markets are thawing. Even though only 4% of venture money goes to women, it's getting better. You don't need a spouse to go get a loan at a bank. So I think that the market is great, and there's more and more women who are looking at entrepreneurship as an alternative to a career while maybe doing other things in their lives.
So if you could say one thing to these women who are starting businesses every day, what would that one thing be?
Well, I think Vic talked about it earlier. The one constant that I see with all of our members and the entrepreneurs in general that I talk to, it's tenacity and really just you can't give up. It is so easy, I think, especially for women, to feel some days that they just can't do it all because they've got, you know, maybe carpools and things and camps to organize. Maybe they've got vacations to plan and bills to pay, and then they've got employees and payroll to take care of. So it's just you cannot give up, and you have to think bigger, much bigger.
You mentioned that your dad was an entrepreneur and ran a restaurant. Did you learn that lesson from him about not giving up?
Oh, yeah. You know, there were several times where my dad was opening up new restaurants and just he would hit a bad time in the economy or, you know, people would not live up to their end of the deals, contractors. I saw my dad go through periods of not paying himself so that they could pay everyone. But meanwhile, he had a lot of, you know, private school tuitions to pay. My dad really taught me not to give up and to just keep going.
So did you work in your dad's restaurant?
Yeah. Well, my dad's restaurant, for those of you who are D.C.-based, was La Bergerie in Old Town. It still exists. And it was a very white tablecloth, fancy restaurant. And I only got to work in the coat room. That was about as far as they would let me. I worked for tips. And I quickly realized that once I let everybody know that the guy at the front of the house was my dad, that I got better tips. So it worked, but it wasn't.
Do you see any of that entrepreneurial spirit in your children?
Oh, yeah. My poor kids, they are in third and second grade, the older ones. And even if they want to have a lemonade stand, they have to talk through the ROI. So we break it down, you know, revenue minus cost equals profit. If they want to sell Madelines, we've broken down the cost to make a Madeline is 17 cents. And so they have to come up with what they're going to sell it for and what the profit margins are. And it is hilarious. They are very, very entrepreneurial driven.
So you've run enough businesses now, you can answer this question. Is it harder to be a mom or harder to run a business?
Oh, I don't know. You know, the difference is if you're a mom, you're a mom. Like, you can't quit being a mom. So I think that some of those thoughts that creep into your mind when you're building a business of like, oh, maybe I'll just hang it up. You can't do that if you're a mom. They're equally amazing and wonderful roles to play. They're just different.
What's the website?
Hercorner.org.
This is Dana Theus with my co-host, Kate Roche. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a minute after this spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Randy Tharp, director of the 5-9 Group. Welcome, Randy. Randy, what is the 5-9 Group?
The 5-9 Group is an IT services company here in D.C., and we provide application solutions, DevOps, and program management for the federal government.
Mm-hmm. And what's your role in the company?
I'm the director of business development.
So that means what?
So that means I'm the guy responsible for gaining new business.
Mm-hmm. And so what is it that makes the organization special in your view?
Well, the company was created out of the role that they play. It's called 5-9, so 99.999% availability is what our goal is, to serve our customers.
And what do they appreciate about you guys?
They appreciate that we can actually deliver that.
Mm-hmm. And who is the perfect client in your mind?
The perfect client is one who understands that we are one of the leaders, and we're the innovators behind them, and they hired us for a reason, and they let us do our jobs.
And what is it about the work that you enjoy most?
Well, the work we enjoy the most is because it's on high availability critical systems for the federal government. For example, DHS or Census Bureau, managing these databases are very important to the taxpayers and to America, so we take that very serious.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say that the clients get from all this work? Where's the value in it for them?
The value is being able to count on an industry leader, on a contractor like us, to get the job done and be available 24/7 to keep things going for them and bring solutions that matter.
That's great. And you got a website?
We do. It's www.59group.com.
Thanks, Randy. We've been speaking with Randy Tharp, Director, 5-9 Group. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. You can hear the show again at businesstalkradio.net.
This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining me for this segment is Doug Kay, who is a principal with a firm called Offutt Kerman. What is Offutt Kerman, Doug?
Offutt Kerman is a full-service law firm in the Mid-Atlantic region, with offices from Philadelphia all the way down to Tysons Corner, Virginia, where I work.
Right. And you're a lawyer with the firm?
I'm a lawyer with the firm.
What practice area do you specialize in?
I mostly do work in commercial litigation, although I also do work in doing criminal defense and personal injury, anything that gets me to trial.
Anything that gets you to trial. Well, why do your customers appreciate you?
I think they appreciate me because I am a careful and sympathetic listener, and I try to offer concrete solutions to their most vexing legal problems.
Well, give us an example. Do you have, without mentioning specifics, a recent example of where you were really good at this? How about your favorite client up till now, without getting into two particulars there?
Well, I represented a fellow who was in a commercial lease, and the landlord was determined to make him pay more than he should have been paying. And we had to go to court, and we had to go all the way through trial, and the client really appreciated the effort, and we got an excellent result for the client. And that was very satisfying, and since then he's been talking me up all over town, so I can't thank him enough.
Yeah. What's the best part of practicing law for you?
I would say that it is taking people through difficult circumstances when they think they don't have any options, and trying to find a good solution for them.
Great. What's the website address for the law firm?
www.offuttkerman.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Doug Kay, who's the principal with Offutt Kerman. This is Peter Schwartz, and that was your Business Spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Jody Ruth, founder and president of Acumetrics. Welcome, Jody. Jody, what is Acumetrics?
Acumetrics is a firm that works with CEOs that are interested in growing their revenues and bottom lines in a scalable, sustainable way.
And what's your role within the company?
I'm the founder and president.
And what is it about the job that you bring that's so unique to you, that special gift, as we say?
That special gift? I enjoy working with the CEOs to have them achieve goals that they thought were impossible.
And what is it about the organization that makes it so special?
We work our clients say that it's the three P's: our people, our platform, and our processes. Our people are highly qualified and they're fun to work with. Mm-hmm. Our processes are enabling of reliable and timely financial information, and our platform is scalable.
And who is, or what is perhaps, the perfect client for you?
Businesses of any size that want reliable, timely financial information.
Mm-hmm. And what do you enjoy most about this work?
I enjoy working with the clients and making a difference. We like to help the CEOs understand their financial information so they can make different choices tomorrow to impact future results of the business.
That's great. What's the website for the company?
www.acumetricsllc.com.
Thank you, Jody.
Thanks, Les.
We've been speaking with Jody Ruth, founder and president of Acumetrics. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theus, with my co-host, Mike Rosnow. Next up, we have Wes Hester, president and CEO of Foxhole Technology. Wes, what is Foxhole Technology?
Foxhole Technology is an information technology company specializing in test and evaluation, software engineering, network and cybersecurity, and we're located in Fairfax, Virginia.
And how big or small is it today?
Well, we're a small business. However, we're spread out. We have folks in 17 states now, plus overseas in Germany and other exotic places we go. But revenue-wise, we're approximately $121 million this year with 120 folks.
So foxhole sounds like there's a reason for the word foxhole.
Yes. I was in the military, retired out of the Army, and when I retired, I went to work with another company that had some family involvement, and in 2007, we started Foxhole. We picked the name Foxhole because of the Army background and really from the boardroom to the foxhole. This is kind of where our culture is driven.
You were in the military?
I was.
What?
Army.
You were Army. Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
What caused you to go in the Army?
Well, my dad was in the National Guard growing up, and I saw the ethics and the morals and the drive that he had in giving back to the country, and it's something I always wanted to do. I came in actually to the National Guard, and 20-plus years later, I found myself retiring out of the military. I enjoyed what I did.
Now, your dad had a big impact on your life before then as well. You had a bit of a turning point when you were 12 related to him.
I did. I grew up in a home that my dad was an alcoholic, and however, he recovered. He actually was really proud of my dad. Growing up, there were some really troubling years there growing up in a home, but he later went to college and went on to get his master's and PhD and became a really good role model for myself.
What was your mom doing during those years?
Well, my mom was doing a lot of different things, from being a secretary to selling vacuum cleaners, you name it, Amway. She was trying to make ends meet and really there trying to facilitate our life and get us through this. But it took a lot more than my mom. It took friends and family and a real culture around him to get him uplifted.
Mm-hmm. What did you learn from your parents in those years that you see helping you succeed in your business today?
I really learned a lot from my mom and my dad that even when there's diversity or there's issues or you have to drive through them. You have to survive. You have to find that light at the end of the tunnel. And my mom is often, she is really a person that has really influenced me. My wife often says that, I'm really driven, that I'm like a dog with a bone, if you will, to use her terminology. But I learned it from my mom. No matter what happens, you just continually drive through it.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in North Carolina, Shelby, North Carolina, foothills of the Appalachian Mountains, and then later in Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
What, brothers and sisters?
I have two brothers. I have a stepbrother, and my mother actually remarried later in life. My father passed away, and so I have two brothers.
Are older or younger?
They're both younger.
So you were the older brother?
I was the older brother.
So there was a lot of pressure on you to as the older son while this was going on. What did you do for fun as a kid?
Well, I played sports both in high school and college, and I was a wrestler, and so I that was really dedicated and really worked hard at that, and that really and actually I think that helped my parents as well as we worked through that because they had a focal point.
So I'm curious, what makes you want to get up and go to work each day?
You know, the drive and the challenges of each day of making a difference with our clients, to make a difference in the lives of individuals who are in our company, our corporation. We really feel that we have become a company that provides a strategic value to our clients, and we're not really, you know, wouldn't say we're consultants in a sense, we're really strategic partners to our clients. And that drive and that excitement and that passion carries through to our all the individuals in Vauxhall.
Wes, what about your military career has enabled you to become the successful business owner and CEO that you are today?
Well, you know, the military really prepared me well, I think, in the sense that the values that you learn in the military, the experiences you have in the military, the relationships, that camaraderie to that, also that drive that the military offered and taught me. I think my career path was, you know, being a guy who was in the field to a guy who eventually became into the acquisition corps, and I think that helped structure my traits and my skills for life after the military. Also, I'm very fortunate the military sent me to get my master's in software engineering, and so that's helped me in the technology field.
You said that you make a practice of hiring veterans. What can you tell us about hiring veterans that we should know, that maybe we don't know?
Yeah, so it's almost, the military is sort of like a fraternity in a sense, and in that when I hire a veteran, and it's not that they're the cream of the crop always, but it's I know that where they've come from and the skills that they have. And so a veteran has had certain rigor in their life, certain traits and skills that have been instilled in them that translate very well into the civilian life. So when I hire a veteran, I pretty much know, you know, what he's been trained on, what experiences he's had, and that same drive I can translate into a client relationship.
You mentioned also that you have children, and now you have a grandson. Congratulations.
Yes, thank you.
But there's something special about him.
Yes, I have a six-year-old grandson, Will Allen, and he is the love of our life and a lot of joy. He also has autism, and we've really enjoyed working with him, and he finally began speaking, and he's... We're hopeful that we will be able to mainstream him at some point. And he's just a great joy to be around, and it's been great to watch how he's transitioned through the years.
So finding out that you have some child in your family that has special needs is never an easy thing for a parent or a grandparent to hear. What advice would you give to those out there who may be hearing this news?
Well, you know, I think a lot of times, a lot of parents, they don't see this early on, and sometimes they deny it. We were actually fortunate. We recognized that Will, through another teacher, had autism. And so early on, we were able to get him to the right forms, the right help to work through some of these issues. And so we're hopeful that by doing it early, that he will be a normal performing individual later in life.
I'm curious. You have a lot of adversity in your life, an alcoholic father, an autistic grandson, excuse me. What do you find that is the common theme to all of these things that lets you succeed in your business?
You know, it's life is a marathon. You know, and it's not a quick sprint. It's a marathon. You just have to continually drive through it. You have to have enough rigor in it so that you can do it repetitively because things happen. You never give up. I think that's a story you hear often, but it's you never give up, and you find the light at the end of the tunnel, and you drive through it.
Do you find that never give up philosophy is what is key to helping you succeed in your business?
I think so. I think, our first year in business, we did $800,000 worth of revenue, and we couldn't take a paycheck. And, of course, my wife said, what have you gotten me into? And I said, just believe. We're going to figure it out. And so those things are important because you have to drive through them. You have to believe in yourself. You have to believe in what you're doing, and it just takes time.
You mentioned your wife said, what have you gotten us into?
Yes.
Is she in the company?
She does. She works in the company. And mm-hmm. Lisa's a very special person. She also, her experience in life, she's a breast cancer survivor, 15 years now. And so she's had a lot of challenges in life and has driven through it as well.
What do you find having her in the business is challenging and what is wonderful? And I'm not asking that about her personally, but just about having, your spouse in the business with you.
Sure. Well, there are challenges. And I think anyone who's works with their spouse would tell you there's often challenges. We have to separate what we do, of course, because lanes sometimes can become intertwined. And you want to make sure that you separate the activities you're doing.
Sounds like a common theme today.
And you know, leave it at the office. And you know, and that's hard to do sometimes. You're driving down the road, and you want to talk about this activity, and it's never good.
What does success mean to you?
Well, I think success is, in a lot of ways, is really making our team grow, making our individuals grow in our company, and seeing that we're taking care of our clients and seeing that we're taking care of members of Foxhole. When they're successful, we're successful. And we truly believe that if we make our clients successful, we're all going to be successful. It's not about, you know, gaining revenue, selling product. It's really about how do I make that client successful? And if that happens, we're all successful.
You know, that sounds good, but I wonder if you ever run into situations where it's sort of us or them, and you have to address that philosophy and sure. choose to live by it.
Sure. So there's always, and especially in this time of shrinking dollars and growing needs, there's always this balancing act that you have a client's needs or your individual needs, and how do you balance that with when you only have so many resources? So there are trade-offs, and you have to always be balancing that. But if you're driving towards that, I think you're going to be successful.
What have you learned about leadership? What is leadership to you?
Well, you know, leadership is is something that's very dynamic. I think that, you know, leadership by definition, if you know, is being able to align people to accomplish that, you know, common goal, you know, leading those people to do that. But I think being a leader, you have to also be willing to take a look at your what you're doing right or wrong, and if you do something wrong, being able to apologize or step up and say, let's correct course here. Because you know, leaders make mistakes, but in our philosophy, in our company, we all make mistakes, but it's not about making mistakes. It's how do we learn from it, and how do we move forward and not happen, let it happen again.
What's the website?
FoxholeTechnology.com.
This is Dana Theus with my co-host, Katie Jordan. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in just a moment right after this business spotlight.
This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage, and this is your business spotlight. Joining us today is
David Sondi.
And David, what's the name of your company?
Pocket Math.
Tell us a little bit about Pocket Math.
We're a mobile ad platform.
And what does that mean?
Basically, it means that we give you access to the ability to advertise on mobile phones, tablets, in games, apps, and on mobile websites.
So if I'm a manufacturer of a product, I could actually advertise that product on a cell phone?
Absolutely.
Is that the wave of advertising now? Is that where we're all headed?
It's definitely the industry that is picking up steam.
And when did you, and you own this company, right?
Well, I'm one of people who runs the DC office.
I see. And why did you want to do this?
The entrepreneurial spirit, the opportunity to build something.
What makes you good at it?
I've done it before.
Uh-huh. Give us an example of somebody that's advertised successfully on a mobile device.
There's quite a few. Restaurants are excellent. Point of sale retail is an excellent example of, you know, using it when your proximity is close to the retail store,
mm-hmm.
and delivering up a valuable coupon and then driving that individual back into the store.
And why do you think the consumer likes it?
It's personal.
So it can be personalized to the very phone?
It can be. The technology is still evolving, so it's not as detailed demographically as desktop or display, but as we evolve, we'll get better at that.
Mm-hmm.
And so right now we're able to do a lot on tracking via a device ID.
Mm-hmm. And why do you like this so much personally?
It's just a fast-moving industry.
And what's the website address?
Pocketmath.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with David Sondi, who's with a company called Pocket Math. This has been your Business Spotlight. Thank you.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theus. Next up, we have Mark Drever, President and CEO of Accelerate Solutions. Mark, what is Accelerate Solutions?
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me on the show. Accelerate Solutions is a business acceleration consultancy focused on the federal government and specifically focused on helping our clients do things that help really make a positive impact in America, help make America safer. And what that means in terms of business terms is we really do two types of services to support our clients. We do a business advisory services, which would be a very traditional kind of big four consulting that you would see, business process management type work, systems engineering type work, helping advise our clients on how to buy better, how to buy smarter, how to implement systems better. And then on the other side of it, we do actually the implementation side of the work, which is roughly half of our business, which is doing things such as, you know, COTS implementation, GOTS, custom software application development work.
And you founded this company.
I did. I founded the company on September 11, 2009.
What's the significance of that date?
Yeah, the me picking that date was very deliberate in my overall strategy, and I wanted something positive to happen on that day. And so I wanted something to look forward to every day, and I wanted to know that every day that I ran my business and grew my business and helped serve our customers we're doing things in service of helping make a difference in our country.
Where did this desire to make a difference for the country really stem from in your childhood?
Yeah, it's as early as I can remember. I came from a family of service. Both of my grandparents were in the Army in World War II. My father was in the Navy. My uncle was in the Air Force. My stepfather was in the Marine Corps. And the most influential people in my life all came out of a very service-oriented background.
How did that manifest for you as a child? Were you always going to go into the military?
And that was my dream. As long as I can remember, I always wanted to go in the military. I wanted to go in the Navy because that's where my dad served. And I wanted to fly airplanes. And my father was an aircraft mechanic. And so I was introduced to airplanes at a very early age, began flying at a very early age, and just got hooked from the minute I got into an airplane. That's all I ever wanted to do until I was 16. And that dream kind of came to an end.
What happened?
I was in an accident when I was 16, and I lost the vision of my left eye, and really kind of caused me to refocus what it was that I was going to do, because I'm a very driven and focused individual, and if I don't have a goal or a bogey that I'm going after, then that's just not a good thing for me personally.
So how long were you in a hospital bed?
I was in the hospital for about a week, but it was a long, couple years. I had 12 surgeries on my eye, and there was some plastic surgery involved too, because I was burned, and it was a tough time.
What got you through that?
Yeah, very strong support network, core values of the people that were around me, knowing that I could still do something other than what I had originally set as my goal to make a difference, and that's really how I ended up in this industry. Was a summer internship, and I figured out very quickly that this was the next best thing to serving that I could do, which was supporting the guys that are downrange, the warfighter, supporting folks in the intel community, helping support other government folks to make sure that our tax dollars are well spent.
So you could have gotten a job with any number of companies that do those things, but instead you started your own business. Why did you choose to become an entrepreneur?
Right. So I did work for very large consultancies for the first 12 years of my career, and that was really a tremendous opportunity and training ground for me to prepare myself to be able to run and own my own business. I've been an entrepreneur my whole life in terms of the entrepreneurial spirit. I started my first lawn mowing business when I was 7 years old. I had two older brothers, and I would pay my older brothers to go get the lawn mowing jobs for me because my neighbors wouldn't give me the jobs because they thought I was too young. And I'd pay them a sales commission to do that. And I bought my first tractor when I was 7 years old from a retired Navy captain who lived down the street who financed it for me. $50 purchase. I bought my second tractor from an Air Force general who lived around the corner who financed it for me. It was a $300 finance job. And I always just had that entrepreneurial spirit and that drive. And I was a very unique kid in this area. And I was born in Connecticut, but I moved here when my parents were divorced when I was six. And I grew up in McLean. And I was probably, I was one of the handful of kids in McLean that didn't have any money. And so I was surrounded by very successful people that were all saw my kind of drive and the type of character that I had as a kid, and they got behind me and they backed me, and they always have. And that's actually how I got my business started too, was from somebody who I'd known for 20 years who invested in me and believed in me, and we've made it a great investment.
So you're a great story for how someone can overcome things. You had said earlier also you had a learning disability. Mm-hmm. So you've overcome a learning disability, being too young to run a business, an accident. What do you look for in other people when you want to back them?
Yeah. It's core values. I mean, we are a 100% values-driven organization, and they need to be, you know, they need to be smart. They need to be hardworking, and a quick study, willing to learn. But it's that core set of values. In every interview that I do for somebody, I take them through a very deliberate set of questions around core values. And if their core values align, then they're somebody that I'm willing to make an investment in.
So you've had a very interesting and somewhat checkered life. And I'm just curious, looking back on it, is there anything that you would change?
No, I live life every day with no regrets. So there isn't anything that I would change. I am who I am because of the experiences that I've had. And I've been extremely fortunate and been able to make a really positive impact in a lot of different areas. And that's really important to me.
Are you more like your mom, your dad, or your stepfather?
You know, I think I'm a pretty good combination of all three. I get my work ethic from my father, who was, you know, and, you know, the name on the door I tell people of the company, Accelerate Solutions, isn't a joke. There isn't anything I do that's slow. I move fast in everything that I do, from walking to talking to business. And I get that from my dad. That's the way that my dad was. My mother is the, you know, the most caring person in the world, and you know, she was the one who would stop and pick up the, you know, the homeless guy on the corner and take him home and give him a meal and put him in my dad's clothes, and my dad would come home and be like, "You did what?" But that, you know, my mother's just an amazingly caring person, and so I think my willingness to want to help other people, to want to make a difference in other people's life, definitely comes from her. And my stepfather was is just an awesome guy who's overcome more adversity in his life than probably anybody that I've ever met. And so I think I'm a really good combination of all three of them.
So what would you say to somebody who's just had a string of bad luck?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, you just got to find your new bearing point, and you got to figure out, you know, what your new goal is going to be. And you might not be able to figure it out right away. But, you know, nobody's going to help you but you, in terms of being able to get over things. And so, you know, you got to own it, you have to accept it, and you have to be willing to move on. And if you can't move on, you're never going to be able to find your new goal or your new success. And that was a really hard thing for me during that period, because there's not many times that there's probably not many people that, you know, that can say that, you know, they were really driven and had a goal, and then all of a sudden when they were 16, like, their whole plan was blown up, right? But that's life and that's business, right? I mean, your plan's your plan until it's not, and you have to be able to figure that out.
So what does success mean to you today?
Yeah. You know, success for me is really about building an organization where, you know, all ships rise on a rising tide. It's creating opportunity for people that didn't exist before. And I take great satisfaction in people who are willing to invest in us. And you know, people say, oh, man, you have 150 people and you're in the people business. And, man, that must be kind of a nightmare and a burden. And I actually look at it in a very different way. It's a responsibility, and that's what drives me. Those people are betting on me to come work for my company, and I have a responsibility to them to make sure that the business is healthy, that the business has the right backing that we need, that we have all the things in place that can help them grow. And I think that makes us very different, and it relates back to the fact that we're a values-driven organization.
What's the website?
The website is acceleratesolutions.com, and accelerate is spelled with an X, so Accelerate solutions.com.
This is your host, Dana Theus. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Mark Cohen, Optifor, Katie Jordan-Varisol, Kate Roche, and Mike Rosnow, Arlington Chamber of Commerce, and Justin Lang at Cressa. Mark, would you like to thank our guests?
Sure. We'd like to thank Victor Cornelier, CEO of TSI Corps, Frederic Irwin, the president of Her Corner, Wes Hester, president and CEO of Foxhole Technologies, and Mark Drever, president and CEO of Accelerate Solutions.
And I'd like to thank you, our listening audience, for listening, because otherwise we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com, or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFMHD2 Manassas, WTLPFMHD2 Braddock Heights Frederick, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics. Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Federal News Radio's DoD Wednesday. At 3, DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. At 4, in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a smart discussion on the issues and challenges of the defense community. Plus daily DoD updates, mornings and afternoons, Monday through Friday. DoD Wednesday on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
This paid commercial may